Welcome to Chevron's Lock to Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
Tonight we will be talking about Emancipation, which is the fourth, maybe third episode of Stargate SG-1. And it was written by Catherine Powers and directed by Jeff Wolnoff? Do we have input on how that name is pronounced?
Let's go with Wolnow.
Okay.
Wolnoff? I was just glad I didn't have to say it.
Apologies to Jeff, who's probably never going to hear this, but if you are listening, our bad.
It is the only episode he directed, so we won't have to say it again. This episode aired August 8th, 1997. Let's just, I guess, get started. Actually, which synopsis are we doing?
I have the IMDb one.
All right, take it away.
While exploring a world populated by Mongol descendants, Captain Carter is abducted as a wife of a local warlord.
Okay, a lot more than that happens in this episode of IMDb.
Before we move on, spoiler warnings. As per usual, we will be discussing the entirety of Stargate, so keep that in mind, and also we will be using swear words and or maybe discussing adult content, so
100% that's gonna happen.
this episode seems in particular that there will be swears and there will be adult content, so yes. Let's keep that in mind.
I guess, like, before we start, because I think we all felt the same way about this episode, and I know, like, within my particular friend circle, the feelings are also the same. In the Illustrated Companion, there is a quick little excerpt from Jonathan Glasner about this episode, and I just wanted to kind of read it, because I think it explains some of our problems with it, and also that the producers were not unaware of the reception of this episode. So the book says, according to executive producer Jonathan Glasner, Emancipation was one of the episodes shot whilst we were still finding our feet, and which showed the way not to go as far as the Stargate SG-1 universe was concerned. Glasner says, it was too preachy, and we quickly realized we shouldn't be that preachy. Science fiction is a very good medium for having little moral tales and subtle messages built into the stories, and that's what we were trying to do. We just went way too far with that one, so we pulled back afterwards. Amanda Tapping concurs. Because none of us really liked the episode, I was feeling a little off base with it. Although I did enjoy doing the fight sequence, especially working with a stunt coordinator for 3 days to get it right. But yes, so basically, the whole crew was like, yeah, this is not what we want to do for this show.
Yeah, which I think is clear because they kind of, I mean, there are some other missteps in season one, but they continually get further away from what we had in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, also something I noticed in this episode is, there might be others like this, but this episode takes place completely off-world. Mm-hmm. We're never in the SGC, and we never see General Hammond or anyone at the SGC. So that was interesting. It felt a little off. We didn't have a briefing room scene. We never got an infirmary scene, and those are kind of standard, so.
Which I kind of like, because sometimes it's nice to just, it's not a bottle episode, but it's nice to be like, okay, this is your environment and roll with it, rather than lots of different cutscenes between off-world and on-world. Oh yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, no, I mean, that format, the format of that, I didn't mind. Although I did miss General Hammond, especially after the last episode where he was so awesome.
Mostly because if Hammond knew what was going on this planet, he'd have some things to say.
Yes. So yeah, because the episode basically just starts with them coming out of the Stargate onto this planet. And
what's interesting is I remember when I first watched it, I vaguely liked it from what I remember. And I don't know why, because after watching it again, I'm kind of like, no.
Oh, I liked
it
too.
There are parts of it that I like.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the episode as a whole, I guess.
The first time I watched it, I liked it a lot because it kind of felt like it was a Sam-centric episode. Like, it had the surface appearance that this is like almost an empowering episode, in a sense, because Sam got to kick butt at the end. But then when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, no, this is not empowering at all. This is undercutting Sam at every turn and how to basically not have an off-world mission in a society that is hostile towards a particular sex. So, no, I take it all back. Initial watch was terrible.
And maybe from this episode, we learned that maybe we should listen to Sam when she says we should leave the planet.
Yeah. Or we should just listen to Sam, full stop.
All right. Yeah. So, because basically they get on this planet. They don't then almost immediately see this guy running away from wild dogs. And Jack fires a couple of shots of his sidearm into the air and scares the dogs off. And Abu is the guy's name, and he is very grateful for their help.
Not to be confused with the Aladdin monkey.
Yep. He's very appreciative right up until he realizes that Sam is a woman. And then he's freaking out.
I really liked Amanda Tapping / Sam's snarky lines here, because she goes, Abu goes, "No, I can't look at you." And Sam goes, "Okay, now I'm hurt." So good.
I felt like in this whole scene, Jack wasn't doing really saying anything. And I was like, where are you, bro? Like, you're the mm-hmm. commander of this operation, and they're completely mistreating your second in command and then threatening her life. And he was like at the ready, like had his weapons. Yep. He wasn't reassuring her or really even being that vocal and like, hey, no, like she's a member of our team and you can't. Like, it was very upsetting to me that I felt like he was not doing a very good job of standing up for her.
Jack the whole episode was definitely like present but not present. Like, he would be in scenes but he wasn't saying much, or he would be in scenes but like not acting like how I think a commander when someone, like when a member of your team is in danger. It was very much just like sit back and watch and listen. And I think as we like get to meet Jack more in the series, he definitely is more of a like action kind of guy. He wants to know what's going on, or like the second that there's any sign of danger, he wants, you know, out, he wants to protect. So yeah, this was an odd one for me from a Jack perspective.
Well, I would say he kind of swaps halfway through the episode. Once Sam actually gets kidnapped, he goes into like action Jack mode mm-hmm. and is ready to be all protective. But it just felt like, because again, he did, you know, all of the team got braced and was like ready with their weapons and stuff when things were going south. And initially when Sam, so basically Abu is like, I can't see you, and then the other guys come up and he's trying to talk him down, Daniel actually says like, okay, we'll just take her and we'll leave, like we're gonna go. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, good job, Daniel. And then like a minute later he's like, no, we should stay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Daniel, come on, man. You had it.
Well, it's because the guy goes, she speaks, she dies. Mm-hmm. And Sam goes, I'm thinking we should just go back. And Daniel says, if we learn their customs, we'll be okay. And it's just like, why? Like, you literally have someone in front of you. And I understand, like, there's like an academic urge to like, you know, learn about the lost culture, which, yikes, there's some other things to unpack.
Some
there.
Some racist things in this episode, in addition to the sexist things.
It's so bad. Like, I don't know if I just like missed the racist stuff on the first watch, but on second watch, I was like, hey, this episode's like low key racist. This is
it's not low key. It's bad.
It's not great. But yeah, basically from the moment when Sam says we should go back and Daniel says, no, we'll just learn our customs and we'll be fine, it's just downhill from there.
Well, and for me, I was like, dude, go back and come back with a different team. Like, I don't understand why you have to be like, no, right now we're going to go with these people.
Well, do you know how expensive it is to like open the Stargate, Chelsea? We can't just be going back and forth willy-nilly.
But to be fair though, how many Stargate teams are there right now?
9.
Because we only know that there's 2.
9.
Oh, was there 9?
Well, Hammond said...
Did I miss that?
Hammond said that. In Children of the Gods, the president authorized the formation of 9 teams.
But have they made 9 teams? See, currently we only know there's 2 teams that are active.
Well, Sam and Daniel were briefing a room full of other Stargate members in the last episode. There were like 6 people in there.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. But yeah, so the episode pretty much should have ended right there when mm-hmm. Sam said, let's go back. All right. Peace out. But it did not again, so Sam's like, I think we should go back. And Daniel's like, oh, we can learn their customs, we'll be okay. And Jack doesn't even say anything. He's just like, Here we go. Like, he doesn't even say we're going to stay and here's what we're going to do to make sure everyone stays safe. He's just like, okay, Daniel, whatever.
Which is all the more frustrating because, like, the first chance that they get to, like, separate, Jack's like, cool, bye. Like, what? Like, what?
He almost seemed like he was teasing the whole time.
He was.
Like teasing, like, Sam, I guess, the whole time, especially like with how like they were treating her and whatnot. He didn't take it seriously, and so he was teasing her. And then, like you said, like Chelsea said earlier about, you know, once she actually got kidnapped, he was like, oh, I need to be more serious. And then all of a sudden we were like in super soldier mode.
Maybe he just thought that like this was just some casual misogyny, nothing to worry about. But it was just, yeah, it's odd.
Now the thing is, that is a very man thing to do, right? I think it's very easy for men to miss just how dangerous and scary misogyny is and how dangerous it feels to women. And because with men that I'm close to, it's taken me being very active in pointing out, like, moments that feel dangerous to me, or maybe don't feel that dangerous to me, but would feel dangerous to other women, before they start to open their eyes and be like, oh, wow, like, it's a genuine threat to you. It's not just annoying. It's not just frustrating. It is a genuine threat. And I think especially a man like Jack, who's big and tall and strong and self-assured, wouldn't have any...
Sorry. You just keep listing the great qualities. You're welcome.
Jack may not have the frame of reference to understand just how upsetting that would feel to Sam. Which doesn't excuse it, but it's like...
No. And I think on the first or second time I watched this, it was almost like a double-edged sword where it was like... On the one hand, yeah, like, fucking listen to Sam, and when she says that she's in danger, or, like, because she's a woman, listen to her, or take her out of this situation. But then, like, on the other side of the coin, maybe I would have felt, like, not offended, but, like, rankled at, like, Jack taking her out of a situation that maybe she could have handled. So it kind of, like, a little bit, like, a double-edged sword, because it's, like... Basically, what I didn't want is for Jack to make a decision or for Daniel to make a decision. I wanted Sam to make a decision. So, like, the second that Sam assessed, hey, we should go back or we should leave, that should have been the end of it. And, like, that the decision should have been in Sam's hand. I felt like the decisions were not in her hands. So that's what I think for me was the most annoying part of it.
Yes. Yeah, I think that that's very true. Oh, so we meet Abu's dad, whose name is... Mughal, I think.
Is that actor, perchance, the voice actor of Mulan's father?
Bazoo, yeah, it's Bazoo. Bazoo.
Okay, yes.
Oh, it's like, it's Mulan's dad.
Which is the most important part of this whole episode. Okay, that's the end. Thanks, bye-bye.
But yeah, so we meet Abu's dad, and he kind of promises them safety and takes them back to their village encampment, whatever. And then basically says that Sam has to change if she's going to be in their camp. There's going to be so many angry sighs.
Yep.
I don't know if I should cut them or not when it comes. Because no, normally I would cut out like the breathing into the microphone.
That should be our entire review of this episode, is just one angry, frustrated sigh. That's how we felt about it. Yep. Mostly because, again, Sam says, like, she doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to get into this dress. And Daniel immediately is like, oh, archaeologists do it all the time. Yeah. And it's like, shut up.
And then Sam's like, I'm not an archaeologist, bro.
Yeah.
I have like, that.
That's not my job. That's your job.
I have the clip.
You have the clip, Chelsea?
Yeah. So this is the clip of the conversation after she has put on the most ridiculous blue dress on the planet.
Anthropologists do it all the time. They dress and live as the people they're studying.
I'm not an anthropologist.
You are today.
Yes.
No, Jack, she's not an archaeologist today. You know what she is? She's a fucking soldier, okay? Ugh.
Well, okay, so not only does that not irk me a little bit, but then, like, his smile and his little, like, pat on her shoulder as he gets up and leaves, I'm like, dude, what are you doing, man?
It's
like,
so patronizing.
Oh! It's so...
Another frustrated sigh.
Okay, so, but, like, I started ranting in my notes, and I was like, I have to stop, because it's like, you are the commander of an off-world team. You're in the field. Your second in command has informed you that she has been put in a situation where she is not comfortable, where she her combat readiness is has been hindered. She can't move. She the overall is just saying, hey, bad things are happening. And his response is, well, you look good. Like,
yeah. Yeah. She literally says, I can't move and I can't walk. Jack says, I don't know. It kind of works for me. What the fuck? No, 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 no.
Yeah,
no.
I have that clip too if we want to be mad.
I mean, hang on, real fast, real fast. I'm really glad that y'all brought that up though, because being able to move, I mean, I've never been a soldier. I, you know, have no idea, but I'm assuming hindering your ability to move or to, like, be able to defend yourself is probably a big deal. In the fact that, like, you know, yeah, he just was like, hey, that's fine. You look, like you said, mm-hmm, you look good. I mean, that's red flags? Red siren?
Perhaps that may have contributed, in addition to them just leaving her alone in a tent, for why she ended up getting, like, kidnapped, because she literally couldn't maneuver.
Well, she tried to grab her P90, and yeah, she couldn't grab it because, nope, she could. Although, I was wondering, if you can't move and you're in a tent by yourself, why don't you put your BDUs back on? No one can see you. You're in there by yourself. Why are you sleeping in the dress?
She's a Disney princess, and all princesses have to sleep in their full gowns and their full headdress. It's just the rules.
Do the Shavadai women sleep in those ridiculous dresses, too? Because it was...
They seem to, like, relax the rules, because, like, when Homeboy brings SG-1 into the tents for the first time, he's like, okay, cool, now you can speak in here. So it's, like, in the privacy of your own home/tent. It's cool.
Yeah.
Exactly. So why is she sleeping in the dress? Why?
I have no idea.
Nope.
She's playing archaeologist, and she just assumes this is how it is. But she's not actually an archaeologist, so she has
it's anthropologist. Anthropologist.
Oh, shit. Sorry. That's what I meant. Also, can we just rewind for seconds? We're jumping ahead. Mm-hmm. But when I first watched this, I remember that first scene when all the boys were looking at Sam and they were like jaw dropped and like, wow, she's so beautiful. And I remember thinking, because I was already shipping Sam and Jack real hard here, and I was like, oh man, he's calling her Sam. Like, he's seeing
Not
her
Sam,
as a woman.
Samantha.
Okay, which I totally love. I'm a sucker for it. I love season one Jack calling her Samantha. It is a weakness of mine that I acknowledge fully. But on the rewatch, it comes across so much more not the way I want it to come across. It's a lot more creepy and, like, yeah, back to being patronizing. It's just, like, yeah, not my favorite. It's like,
It's such a cliche, too, the tomboyish girl gets put in a pretty dress and all the men stare at her agog and aghast. And I'm honestly, you guys, as a tomboy and someone who, you know, was forced into dresses as a child and didn't want to wear them, when they start telling her that it's you, I was like, mm-hmm, ready to throw something at, like, the hell, yes, are you talking about? You don't know what her is. You don't get to tell her, yeah, what is, like, her
you
style.
You barely know her.
And if she doesn't feel comfortable wearing it, it is not her. It doesn't express her. Mm-hmm. It does, you know, oh.
It's like the SG-1 equivalent of Sam, like, taking her glasses off, and she was a woman all along.
Yeah,
go ahead, Mel.
I don't know. Just back to the dress thing. I don't understand, like, I mean, I get it. You're wearing a dress and it's more form-fitting than BDUs are, but it doesn't automatically make you more attractive than you already are. Like, it just doesn't compute in my brain.
Dress is, like, hideous.
It's a terrible dress. It's so ugly. Like, it's so...
That headdress is horrible. It's just like, what is happening?
You know, like, the high collar?
The shoulder.
The high collar, you like that?
The shoulder.
Oh, it's a look. It's a look. Amanda Tapping says, I just remember that dress referring to the diaphanous blue affair, which showed more than a suggestion of cleavage. She grins, when the SG-1 guys and the crew first saw it, they all went, woohoo! I just looked at them and said, you know, guys, smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of push me, pull you working here. That's all it ever was and is all it's ever going to be.
I agree that the dress is ugly. And the only thing that it's doing for her is that it's blue and it brings out the blue of her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, it is like, yeah, there's some cleavage, but I don't know if the men's jaws all dropped with the like black dress that she wears in the alternate reality in season 9. Okay, that would make more sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's a hell of a dress.
Yeah. And you would think that Jack and Teal'c and Daniel had never seen
a woman before.
A woman in a dress, like in a nice dress. They have to have seen women in more, like, revealing dresses than that.
I mean, Daniel, who knows? The other two, yes. Daniel, is that's debatable.
Abydos was well, like, surprisingly sex positive.
Yeah. And I also wish there was a more, like, firm idea of, like, how much time has passed. Like, how long have they been SG-1? Like, I know it's obviously only the third episode, but, like, how long have they spent together? Like, how is there no way that, like, Sam wasn't called onto base in her civvies? You know what she looks like.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and we know that it's been long enough for them to have another mission that we didn't see where Sam apparently got drunk and disrobed.
What happened? Why did you bring that up? Because now she's going to go on a rant about it for, like, 20 minutes.
But it's still,
that's later in the episode. Don't you worry. Yeah. I got notes on it.
There are a couple of lines where she is clearly trying to still prove herself because she says to Jack a couple times, you know, when he's about to leave her alone in the tent, she kind of makes a comment of like, you know, you still don't believe in me. And right before the fight at the end. So it's clearly early days enough that she does not feel like she has been fully accepted, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, and it's also because the boys are leaving for this festival party thing that only the men are invited to. So they're leaving her alone in this yurt. And Jack says, you gonna be all right? And Sam says, still doubting me? And she kind of like juts her chin out. And it's very much, like you said, Sam's got a chip on her shoulder still and is trying to prove something. And it's definitely directed towards Jack. I don't think that she feels any kind of obligation to Daniel or to Teal'c to prove herself. It is definitely directed at Jack.
Yeah, well, I think that she and Daniel started out on pretty level footing.
Next part in the episode is the boys go off to this thing. Sam's in this yurt alone. And I am saying yurt because they make it a point to call it a yurt, which I love. And Sam gets taken by Abu and...
Which is the worst part, that he's the guy who took her, right?
Why is it the worst?
It's not the worst part. It's just, like, he's not really a warrior or that intimidating.
No, he's, like, a baby.
He's, like, a teenage kid.
I'm still quite confused on how he managed to kidnap her. Because he's
subdue her continuously.
He's, like, a buck tin soaking wet, y'all. Okay, I'm just saying. And he managed to... Oh, he had the knife.
Yeah, he had the knife, right? And he was at least smart.
I forgot.
And then he tied her hands in the most elaborate knot I've ever seen.
Well, I just remember the knife and then the thing in her mouth, and that was, and then she was taken, and I was very confused.
Yeah, it's just insulting to Sam to think, but I guess also, like, you know, doesn't matter how trained you are. Also, if someone gets the drop on you, like, it happens.
And she was sleeping; her guard was down. Yeah. She thought she was, like, yeah, she's off-world, but they'd been promised protection in this place.
Yeah.
And she was in the stupid dress, and she couldn't move, like.
But, like, also, if her team had just hung back, or, like, there's fucking four of you, someone couldn't have gone to the party, someone could have been like, hey, like, Daniel, Teal'c, Jack, all man outside the door, like, we don't leave people separated or behind. Why did all three of you have to go to this party? It is
because they're all men.
I know, but it's so, like, from a pure tactical standpoint, so dumb.
Yeah.
Because like Chelsea said, is they felt safe, I guess, in that area. That, I mean, why would you have to have someone out protecting a tent if you're in a place that's that, you know, you're protected or there are friendlies there?
Right.
Well, because you see, there's a society that hates women and says that they can't speak and will kill them if they speak outside of the yurt. So just a thought. I know there's protection, but you know.
I think it would be fair to be like, okay, Sam may not be the safest person in our group right now. Let's not leave her alone.
Right. And we kind of basically get this Romeo and Juliet style story where Abu wants to trade Sam to a nearby warlord, Turgon, not warlord, but competing chieftain. Again, low-key racist episode. The terminology that got used in this episode, I don't know. And Abu wants to trade Sam for what's-her-face?
Naya.
His love. Naya. So that's essentially the core plot of why all of this is happening.
Yeah. Surprise, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
So Sam goes missing, and then it starts cutting back and forth between her with Abu slash at the Turgon's camp and Daniel and Teal'c and Jack and Mughal trying to find
her. You mean Mulan's father?
And Fazu.
Yes.
Trying to find her. And it leads to one of the first examples we have in the series of a classic Daniel-Jack argument, which I did pull the clip for that, if you guys want to listen.
I just want to say, I think I know what clip you're about to play, and the note I have after it is, hey, fuck you, Daniel.
I honestly ended this episode way more mad at Jack than Daniel, just because I think I expect more of him.
That's fair.
All right, so here's the clip.
Okay, let me talk to Miguel first. This could be another misunderstanding. Cultural differences.
The hell with culture. A member of my team has been neutralized. That's a hostile act.
How is it that you always come up with the worst case scenario? I practice.
Because he's lived the worst case scenario, Daniel. That's why.
But like you're literally in a situation where a member of your team has been taken and like, and I understand there's a need for diplomacy and shit, but like, yes, as Jack said, that's a hostile act. And Daniel's first response, first instinct is, it could be a cultural misunderstanding. Let's talk it out.
Okay, wait. I'm about to defend Daniel. Okay, I'm about to defend Daniel here.
No, Melanie, you betrayed me this way.
Do it. Do it.
You have to realize from his point of view, he's not a soldier either. He's an is he an anthropologist? What is he?
He's an archaeologist.
Anthropologist. Who knows?
Anyway, he's an archaeologist, anthropologist who, I mean, he's not thinking of it from a tactical standpoint. He's thinking of it from a scientific standpoint where, like, maybe it is a culture
Understanding?
Understanding. Okay, but you're also on a military team, and there hits a point where it's not about the science, it's about the safety, and, like, no.
But he hasn't learned yet.
And he never will.
He learns a little bit. He learns a little bit.
No, you won't win that argument.
No. He does learn a little bit, and he learns some military tactics, at least. So, I would say, in Daniel's defense, all we know is that she's not in her yurt at that point. Right?
That's true. She's just missing.
Yeah, so maybe one of the other women came in the night and took her to do some ritual bathing thing or something.
But wouldn't Fazu know that this is a thing that's supposed to happen? That it's like a ritual that's supposed to happen?
Exactly, that's why Daniel says we should go talk to Mughal and see if this is...
Oh, he wasn't there yet.
No, he wasn't there yet. Daniel said we should talk to him and see if this is a misunderstanding. So I don't think Jack is wrong for, like, my person is missing, I'm going on red alert. Like, I wish he'd gone on red alert sooner. But but I also don't think Daniel being like, we don't know that much about these people. Like, there weren't really signs of a struggle. There was no blood or any reason for them to immediately be like, something terrible happened here. So I think him being like, we got to talk to the guy and see what happened, because then Mughal walks in and is like, and with Teal'c, and Teal'c says, oh, one of the horses is missing. And Mughal basically says, Abu's horse is missing. And they immediately realize that she's been taken.
Well, before that, though, when you said there's no sign of a struggle, if Sam did leave of her own accord with someone else, don't you think she would have left some sort of
note
or something? I mean,
her P90 was hanging out, like, you know, abandoned.
It wasn't a P90 yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, it was an MP5? Was it an MP5?
Yeah. I don't care, but I know that there might be people who get.
We're going to get.
Okay. So, but it was an MP5? Is that what it is? Yeah. An MP5? Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So she left the MP5 there. I mean, although I don't think she can really carry that around. Mm-mm.
Why, that and dress, that MP5 would go beautifully with that dress. Yeah.
Tuck it where? Or like, you know, where like are you going to tuck it just?
Well, there's ample room in that.
There's no thigh holsters, okay? You can't, there's nothing there.
I will say, in Jack's defense, to me, this is their turning point for Jack as a commander, where I'm like, okay, he's done being the asshole he was for the first 20 minutes of this episode, and now he's going to be what he should have been the whole time. So this is at least a turning point for Jack.
Yeah.
Although I have more comments as we go through the episode where I was like, Jack, what the fuck? But we'll get there.
All right. At Turgon's camp, we discover the Romeo and Juliet thing, but it does not go in Abu's favor. But he gets at least 300 weights of gold out of the deal. But that whole scene where Turgon is bargaining for / buying Sam, it's hard to watch. It's yes. Hard to watch.
And immediately in the aftermath of that as well, where he starts threatening her and beating her, all of that, it is, like, nothing graphic happens. Like, she gets hit across the face and, like, but it's the way that he threatens her with, like, the knife and demands that she turn around and, like, she just becomes this, like, passive object for him to buy and purchase and move around at his whim. And it is so uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. I do have to give Amanda Tapping a lot of credit for how she plays this whole episode. Like, yes. She really gives the whole episode her all and gets a lot across that wasn't necessarily on the page. And the way that she manages to, like, keep her posture so strong and confident during the entire scene where she's being purchased, and anytime that Turgon is making horrible demands of her or being terrible, she is maintaining her composure and being strong. And, like, even when she's actually doing what he says, because otherwise she will die, she's still kind of maintaining her air of confidence and stands up for Naya, this girl she doesn't know, who is apparently in love with the guy who just kidnapped her. And she's, mm-hmm. like, standing up for her, like, why would you sell your daughter off? And
because Samantha Carter is better than literally everybody.
And you brought up her acting ability. I'm also going to throw in that during the whole purchase part with when the knife's at her throat and whatnot, like, there are times when she's, like, super, like, stoic and, like, not, like, trying to show fear. But then there are, like, little flashes where her eyes kind of show that she's, like, worried about what might actually happen.
Yes.
Which is really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay.
A+
also, side note on this one, because I read this in the, sorry to keep bringing up the Illustrated Companion, but I read this and I just, like, felt extra enraged at this scene. So according to Amanda Tapping, the actor who played the Mongol warrior who buys Carter was very tough. She says, he gripped my throat really hard and really got in there and pulled my hair. And I was just like, oh, you asshole. Like, oh, I hope Amanda Tapping kicked your fucking ass. Like, how dare you? So, like, that, knowing that as well, made that whole extra scene, like, more tense almost.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I always get uncomfortable watching specifically the more close quarters, like, domestic type of violence in movies and TV shows, not just because it's more personal, but also because I cannot suspend disbelief. All I can think of is if the actress was in distress when they were filming that scene.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that, after having read a lot of horror stories similar to that one from actresses, it seems pretty common that when they're mm-hmm. filming domestic abuse scenes or rape scenes or, you know, sexual assault scenes, that they...
And things get close to a certain line.
Yeah, and it's very upsetting for them. And so now whenever I see those kind of scenes, it makes me uncomfortable because of the fiction and because of thinking of the distress that the actress may have been in.
Same. But yeah, I have a note in my notes after this scene. It just says, just let it be known, the rest of my thoughts can be summarized in rage and eye rolls.
And, ugh. Yeah. I wrote you a couple times.
Yep.
So then we get the discussion at the camp where the guys are following, basically unwrapping some more of the culture and discovering why their women are so subjugated, and that apparently it started out as a way to protect them from the Goa'uld. Seemingly, I don't know.
Sure.
How?
Well, maybe, so, wasn't it, so later on when we meet Kendra on the, like,
The Thor
planet, she says that she had been raised, like, she was a beautiful child, and they, like, kept her hidden because she was beautiful and they knew that the Goa'uld would choose her. So maybe there's a component of if the Goa'uld can't see the women's faces to determine that they're beautiful, then they won't take them. Maybe.
You know, that's actually an interesting theory because, I mean, they took Shari because she was beautiful.
Yeah, but like you can also cover someone's, but covering someone's face doesn't mean you have to also say, oh, also you can't talk and you don't have any rights and you're not allowed to like be integrated. Like, I understand that this is not like the most progressive of cultures or whatever, but it seems like a cop out to be like, oh, we did it to protect you.
Yeah, no, and it is totally a cop out. Yeah. I'm saying that maybe it actually could have devolved from a point where like, oh, we start by having the women cover their faces and then it devolves. And even Fazu even says that he basically acknowledges it, that it's just an excuse because, and he has the great quote. I don't know if you guys want me to play it, right?
Yeah, play it.
Okay. So this is what he says.
If the demons are God, why have not the laws been changed?
Some say they will return. I think it is an excuse for men to have their way. Among the Shavadai, even the lowliest man is chief among his women.
So, and that's just a classic, and this quote actually reminds me of a famous quote from LBJ, who basically said that if you can convince the lowliest white man that he's better than the best black man, then he will basically be pleased when you pick his pocket. And this is sort of the same concept of him saying, if the lowliest man is a chief among his own women, then so I actually liked that they sort of acknowledged that, oh, we did it to protect our women, but then Mughal is basically saying, yeah, no, that's bullshit.
Yeah, and he knows it.
Yeah,
and to be fair, you can see a difference between the way that I'm not sure, call him Fazu and Turgon are running their camps. Like, there are very different, even though they're technically the same culture, there's two different camps and two different kind of environments.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the women, even though they were all covered in stuff at Fazu's camp, they were dressed colorfully, they looked happy, they were interacting with the men. So, I mean, at least Abu's mom came running out to greet him. But at Turgon's camp, it definitely, the women were more sedate and seemed more fearful. So I guess in this particular world, Fazu is progressive, but that's a very low bar. Much.
Yes. And then I think that pretty much then we go to Turgon's camp. Am I jumping ahead? Then we flash back to Turgon's camp and
Sam tries to escape, right?
Yes.
No, yes. Yeah. So he sends her out to like cook and stuff, and she immediately takes a knife and tries to escape and gets caught. And then he brings her back and get the line that is so gross where he says, I'll teach you how to be a woman. That just makes my skin crawl. I didn't pull the clip because I just hate it.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
But then, so he's like insulting Sam, like, what kind of woman are you? Now these women that were in charge of you are going to have to be punished. And he's getting ready to beat his wife, presumably, because it's Naya's mom.
Which, like, isn't that, like, such a great example of, like, how abuse works, where it's like your actions are now causing harm to others. Like, I'm doing, like, you made me do this. Like, because you tried to leave, I now have to inflict harm on others. So it creates this environment where it's like you are scared to act, or you're nervous to act and leave and get to safety, because if it goes wrong, or even if it goes right, you could be leaving behind somebody who's going to take the brunt of your abuser's anger.
Yeah. No, it's a classic abuse tactic and like interrogation tactic that I mean, it's used in prisoner of war camps. It's used generally not in good situations.
No.
And it is horrible, but it does give us this classic Sam line.
No! It was my fault. If you need to beat a woman to feel like a man, try me.
Get it, Sam. But also, it's like... So but, like, we're supposed to root for her getting... Like,
yeah, no, it's like... I mean, she's... It's in her nature that she wouldn't just stand there and let someone get punished for something she did. Right. So of course she would speak up, but yeah, then it's like, this is a lose-lose scenario.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the way he talks to her after that, and he kisses her.
Oh, it's so...
Oh yeah, that was so gross. Oh my god.
Like, this is a little off topic, but there are some really good post-ep fix for this that talk about, like, Sam dealing with, like, the aftermath of this, like, that it wasn't rape, but it was still assault, and it was like the fear of what could have happened. And I recommend highly, if I find the links, maybe I'll post them. I don't know if anyone's interested, but they're really, really good. Yeah, I know you are, Melody. But there's some really good ones, and it's kind of that whole thing where it's like this episode skirts, like, it never, like, even though Sam's never raped, it is like enough of a violation that you feel so icky. Like, you're just like, this is not right at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And because not only is it's sexual assault, like, we don't need to call it anything else. She gets sexually assaulted, but there is a clear and present threat of rape.
Yes.
That was hours away. Like,
yeah.
So, it's a pretty horrible violation that Sam is experiencing that, I mean, the show constantly is just kind of brushing past all of the terrors and horrors that the team goes through.
There's no emotional fallout in this show, okay?
No.
And that's one of the biggest, like, things that just, like, I don't want to say devastates me, but, like...
No, it does.
It devastates me because there's so much emotional fallout potential for, like, a good chunk of all these episodes that we go through, and they don't tap into the potential, especially with the actors that they have playing those characters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, and it's like, I get it. It's a sci-fi action show, and you don't want to be spending large chunks of time, like, in a therapist's room, or even just the characters talking to each other. I understand
yes,
that.
Yes, they do.
Their format, and they have to sell it to a studio. Like,
I know.
I absolutely would watch that. I have watched shows like that. I mean, Shonda Rhimes is insanely popular. It is a good point. It's a very valid point. And I have said this about a lot of my favorite shows, because a lot of my favorite shows have the same problem where they're constantly putting these characters through ridiculous and horrible things and never let them sit in the emotional fallout of it. And I would honestly, instead of a clip show once a season, which I realize in 97, people didn't watch every episode, you had to catch them up. But instead of a clip show once a season, have them sit down in a, like, do a group therapy session and recap the season that way. And talk about the emotional fallout that they had because of all of the horrible things that happened that season. I would watch at least one of those episodes every season for every show I've watched, where the characters just get, like, trapped in a room and have to talk about all the shit they've been through. And especially,
I would be here for it.
Yeah.
Most def.
You guys, I wrote you on my page so many times.
I wrote lots of eye rolls on mine, actually.
Yeah, so Sam gets threatened with rape and sexually assaulted, and then we cut to the forest where the guys are trying to decide when, if and when and how they're going to come try and intervene and get her. And
if and when?
So basically whether they're going to assault the camp or go in and try and trade back for her. Okay. And whether they're going to do it that evening or wait till morning. So they're first saying we'll wait till morning. And then Jack's like, well, what'll happen to Carter if we wait till morning?
Indeed.
Yeah. And then we get this little exchange.
Turgon will partake in his newest purchase.
Oh, there's not a chance in hell.
Yeah. So Fazu says that if they wait till morning, that Turgon will partake in his newest, what did he say, purchase?
Mm-hmm. So gross.
And Jack does get credit for his response here, which is, oh, there's not a chance in hell, and then he cocks his gun.
Well, I think that could be taken, I mean, from Jack's perspective as I'm not going to let that happen. But then I also think Sam would fight, like, probably to the death in order to not let that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think he's kind of referring to both. I was glad. So I think because of how upsetting this was the first time that I watched it, I was expecting it to take longer for her to be freed. And so then when they just come in and there's the little bit of back and forth and whatnot, the bartering, but then she went with them and it was just like such a relief.
Yeah. It's like, which is what she says. She literally says, what a relief. I've never been so happy to see you guys.
Yeah.
But then, oh, I don't know, Carter. What about that time on P3X595 when you drank that stuff that made you take your... What? Let's not get into that now. What happened on P3X595? Guys.
She drank something that she wasn't supposed to drink and she started taking her clothes off. That's what happened.
Yeah, I know, but I need to see that episode. I need to see the visual evidence. I need to know the circumstances. I need... That whole, you know what, can we just delete this episode and have that episode instead?
You know what, though? There's multiple episodes that we don't see.
But yes, that is one of those episodes that gets alluded to establish that, yes, there's been other missions. But man, I really want to see it.
According to the Stargate Wiki, it's at least partially the subject of one of the novels.
Which one?
Sacrifice Moon.
I have that one.
You do?
Yes.
So before Sam is fully rescued, she helps Naya escape. And also we get yet another scene where Sam is being bartered for. And even though she's not present, it's still upsetting.
Yes.
And although I do love the way that it gets, that first of all, Jack is just offering money for, like, he just ups the bid when he's not, we'll pay you back.
Yeah, we're good for it, we promise.
But in typical Jack fashion, he just cuts right to the heart of the matter and realizes that the way to this man's heart is through weapons. And offers him a mostly empty magazine in a handgun, and it's genius.
Yes. Which, thank God, they all spent the bullets shooting into the air.
Well, and Jack had spent bullets shooting into the air to chase up the dogs.
Yeah.
So he said there were... I mean, so I guess there would have been 6 rounds left when he gave it to them, because then...
There was 5.
Well, no, he says 5 after the first time that Turgon fires it.
No.
I thought. I could be wrong.
Whatever. Total side note, and only semi-related, there once was a CSI... Las Vegas episode about a kid who shot a gun up into the air like 3 blocks away, and the bullet had to come down and it hit someone and killed them. And ever since then, anytime I see a character shoot a bullet up into the air, I'm always like, fam, it's got to come down somewhere. And like, I don't know if it comes down with the same velocity to like injure, but yeah,
it does.
That's what
it
I actually
have. That actually happened in Dallas.
It happened.
Yeah, no, see, there you go.
It happens all the time. Like, and when there's like, you know, big giant celebrations where lots of people are firing their weapons into the air, there's usually repercussions, because it does come down with sufficient, I mean, that's just physics,
like, parabolic.
It comes back down pretty hard, pretty fast. So
every time I see a character like shoot into the air, I'm always just like, that's Don't do that.
Hopefully that lands in the dirt. So please don't do that, okay? Thank you.
This is a PSA. Please don't fire your weapons PSA. Into the air.
That comes from two Texas girls, so that's like an extra weight there. We're all, you know, the stereotype is real. She says as she drinks her water burger.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to bring it up if you didn't say it.
All right, yeah.
Sorry, so a little regional humor for you.
So Sam is freed. She's reunited with the guys. Yeah. She's very pleased about this. And it just, in this moment, Jax need to make light of things frustrates me. And I get it. I don't think it's necessarily helpful for him to make a federal case out of what just happened. But the fact that presumably Sam has just been through a traumatic experience where she may or may not have been sexually assaulted or abused or otherwise hurt. And we don't know if any of them have asked questions to ascertain that. And he makes reference to a time that she got drunk or otherwise, I don't know.
Drugged.
And got undressed, presumably, is where that sentence was going.
Yeah.
And I just want to be like, Jack, dude, time and a place, man. You're not helping things.
This is not Jack's finest episode.
No.
It's not.
As we've discussed, you know, multiple times throughout talking about this episode, but, like, that just, like, solidifies, like, how far this is, like, a good episode for Jack.
And, like, I also really kind of want to get, like, again, like, most of the people that I know that I've discussed this episode about have been women, and I just want to know, like, if the men watching felt any, also, like, felt the way that we felt about at all, if they were like, hey, like, maybe this is not cool or whatever, because I wonder how much of, like, our experience as women, like, I know, like, we don't necessarily, like, want to set out to, like, be, like, this is our topic that we're talking about, but this particular episode is so centric and so heavy to being a woman. Like, everything that happens to Sam happens literally because she's a woman. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I sincerely hope the men watching understood on a more than surface level how upsetting and wrong this episode was.
Yeah, I know that my husband found it upsetting. But I have listened to podcasts with men who didn't necessarily like the episode. Well, some of them did, just liked the episode. And some who didn't seem to understand the hatred for it as much. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a mixed bag, right? Like,
yeah,
different men will have... And I think there are probably some women who are going to have different experiences with it because...
Totally.
It's really all about your own perception and what you bring to the table.
Well, it's also kind of like I said earlier, like when I first watched, like the very, very first time I watched this episode, I actually liked it a lot because it felt like an empowering episode for Sam, because it, on the surface level, kind of felt like Sam's going to show the boys that she can handle herself. Sam can, like, take care of business. Sam's the one who ends up, like, getting the upper hand and getting this, like, kind of, like, these moments are framed as wins for Sam, when in reality, like, when you kind of go back and rewatch, Sam should have never been in those situations in the first place. And at every turn, she's being undercut and patronized, like, all over the place. And so, like, once you, like, reframe the way you're looking at the episode, what on the surface level seems to be a fantastic, empowering episode is actually super shitty. Mm-hmm. So it's just about, like, I guess, yeah, and I've had different experiences between first and second watch, but also just being more cognizant of the way that these narratives are being framed.
Yeah, I agree with that. It can depend on your frame of mind when you're watching it too, but I think I was hyper aware when I was watching it the first time. It was just very obvious to me how Sam's agency was being taken away from her at every step of the way, really until the final confrontation is the only time that she really gets to take matters into her own hands. I mean, yeah, she tries to escape. And so she has little moments of trying to assert herself throughout, but pretty much everything bad that happens to her is because her agency was taken away and she wasn't allowed to make her own decisions. And so, yeah, even though ultimately she does stand, you know, so she does some empowering things and she gets to fight the guy and win at the end. It's still, I don't think the ends justify the means.
Totally.
Oh, I agree.
My next note just says, so the next scene is Turgon is punishing Naya for trying to escape.
She tried to run off
and be with Abu. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And my only note on this is, Jesus fucking Christ, it is really jarring to see a woman tied up and bound on her knees with men holding stones just surrounding her. Even though not a single stone is thrown, the way the camera angle is kind of focused on this ring of men closing in, holding stones, I legitimately got like sick to my stomach on this last rewatch at that particular scene.
Yeah. Nope. It's upsetting.
Yeah.
I'm leaving in all of the upset noises.
Yeah. There's a lot of them.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I luckily had the Stars game on in the background. So, like, I was kind of, like, half kind of watching. Because this is, again, one of the episodes that I really don't like. Mm-hmm. Like, at all. And so, like, as that part was happening, you know, I was focusing on both things. And so, like, I kind of saw it, but really all I saw was, like, the big, like, there was, like, this one guy who had, like, this rock that was, like, humongous. And I was, like, I looked at it and I was, like, is this really gonna, like, is this really what we're throwing at people? Like, this is not cool, man. What a
horrible way to kill someone.
And right? We're killing her, let's remember, we're killing her simply because she tried to run away.
Yeah.
And she's in love.
And she's in love.
With this boy from another camp.
Yeah. And so she must be put to death.
How many stones does it take to, like, how many rounds do they
go? A lot.
I mean, well, it just depends if you get
a lot. You asked it, like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a tootsie pop? How many stones does it take to kill a woman? I mean, my God.
I mean, I'm going to, okay, I don't know how in-depth we need to get with this, but I'm going to assume it determines on how big the rock is and where you strategically throw it.
Yeah, and how hard you're
throwing it. I'm assuming if you hit the person in the head multiple times.
I don't think stoning is a quick death.
No, it's so
horrible. Oh, I'm sure that you're aiming for the neck and lower if we're really going to get down to it, but...
Well, even if you're aiming for the head, the amount of force you would need to not just knock them out or beyond just hurting them, but to kill them is insane. Like, no, it's horrible. And, like, and what's crazy is, like, none of that actually happened in the episode. All we got was one frame shot of these men surrounding this bound up woman on her knees. And then doesn't Turgon, like, go to her and doesn't she say, I'm sorry?
Well, she asks for his forgiveness.
Or she asks for forgiveness and he forgives her.
And then tells them to stone her.
I don't understand what we're forgiving is for what we're asking for forgiveness for trying to leave.
Yeah. She made him look weak.
But then, like, why? Okay.
You fine. Guys, but she, like, made him do it. Now he has to get her killed.
But, like, as the writer, which, can we address, like, not to throw shade, but, like, it was written by a woman. As a writer, why, from a narrative standpoint, why is that scene there? Are you trying to redeem Turgon in some way? Are you trying to, like, what is the purpose of that at all? We've already established that he's an abuser. We've established that he abuses power. We've established that she was absolutely not in the wrong, that this is this whole Romeo and Juliet situation. Why is it there? It drives me insane.
Why is this episode here?
But it is here, and so we have to deal with it.
But, I mean, we discussed it, or Chelsea and I discussed this earlier, or previously before we started the podcast, that she's also written an episode, that she wrote an episode for Next Gen. It's basically fringing on the same thing, where Lieutenant Yar has to fight Klingons in this death battle or something with, like, these poisonous claws. Like,
there's a lot of odd gestures happening.
Wolverine? Well, there was, like, this, like, claw thing she had to wear, and it had, like, poison spikes on there, and, like, you had to, like, punch them with it or something. And I actually think it was Lieutenant Yar and a Klingon woman who were fighting over a man?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, okay. I just wanted to, I've only seen it once, and I can vaguely remember it, but...
So
she's written an episode kind of like this before that fringes kind of on it, but...
I don't understand it.
But as far as the exchange between Naya and Turgon, obviously I can't speak to why Catherine Powers put that scene in. But to me, it just makes him look worse. Because it's basically just solidifying the fact that he's making her the villain. Like, that he would forgive her. It just reestablishes that he's the abuser and he has put her in an impossible situation. And now he's functionally being like, yep, it's your fault and I forgive you for making me kill you.
Yeah, it's rough. Okay, so, and as the stones are about to be thrown, our heroes pop back into the camp and essentially stop the execution. And Fazu
comes limping in just like Fazu.
What's his name in the show again?
Mughal.
Okay, well, homeboy basically decides to use the power of law and these ancient, like, tribal rituals, whatever, and they challenge homeboy to a combat, and they basically say that Sam is a chieftain, so she has the power to fight Turgon, which, yeah, cool. It's empowering, really.
It is kind of a fun switcheroo where he's like, I challenge you as the chieftain. And Turgon's like, I won't fight a cripple.
Oh, because he's such a stand-up guy. He's got morals and standards. He has
honor.
Yeah.
He won't fight a cripple. He'll just stone his daughter.
Yeah. And rape and beat women. No, it's cool. Before we get to the fight part, they're getting ready to jump in. Sam goes, you don't think I can win? And Jack says, sure I do. I assume you've had some basic hand-to-hand combat. How was this not a conversation y'all had before this plan? Y'all didn't stop in the forest back there, and you were like, you've, like, so we're gonna go hand to hand, but you've definitely, like, you're cool, right? Like, we're, like, karate level here, or what's your deal? What the fuck?
I mean, they didn't find out how the winner was determined.
That's true. Out of curiosity, how do the spirits determine who wins? And then he goes, it is a fight to the death. What the fuck? No one wanted to talk about this. Again, there was a nice patch of trees in the back. You could have just paused for 2 seconds and had that conversation.
I mean, it was just a fight. They were just fighting. So, I mean, you challenge them and you fight and, you know, it's cool.
Someone wins.
But going back to your whole Jack thing about how he doesn't know that she can do hand-to-hand, you would think, I mean, I don't...
He knows his people.
He would have read her file at some point or asked her, like, hey, what's your field readiness? Like,
no way does Jack not know that. And I posted my general recap on my Tumblr account, and someone had posted or responded to that particular critique that it was like Jack playing dumb. But she says, I think that Jack's apparent laissez-faire attitude of, I assume you've had hand-to-hand combat training, is 100% Jack playing not dumb exactly, but that thing he does where he gives away as little as possible. She says, because I guarantee you that Jack knows the records and education and training of every single person on his team down to the tiniest details. He's lost people in the field, and there's no way he's going to go out without knowing his people are as prepared as they can be. And then she says, I think this is him not finding out it was a fight to the death beforehand is because this is still really early on when they were all still figuring out what the hell the gate program was going to be.
Discuss. Okay. I don't agree with that part, but I agree with the whole part where she said that Jack would know everything about his team and, like, their qualifications and their knowledge and whatnot. I mean, I would agree with that. I think that he would definitely know everything about, you know, what Sam can do in the field, what Daniel can do in the field, which is nothing. What?
Maybe he was giving Sam an opportunity to be like, to be a little braggadocious and just be like, yeah, I've got level 3 hand-to-hand combat training. And Jack's like internally like, yeah, I know. But like also externally like, good job. Yeah. Ooh, okay. Good luck.
Yeah. I think that's a possibility. We see Jack play that tactic a lot, but the not knowing it was a fight to the death was inexcusable on every level. I mean,
yeah,
there are 4 people on this team. Any one of them should have asked, how is the winner of this fight determined? Is this a knockout? Is this like Taekwondo, 3 strikes to the body? Like, what? Yeah.
To be fair, the second that he says to the death, Jack puts his hand on his gun and like takes off the safety. So like he was definitely ready to like jump in if needed.
Right. Still information that they should have had before the fight started.
Correct.
Okay. I think that Sam should have asked that question if she knew that she was going to hop in and be like, I'm going to fight you. Mm-hmm. Like,
I agree.
You would think she'd be like, so how do I win this before I go and hop into this ring over here?
There's definitely an onus on Sam as well to have asked.
On all of them. On any, like, this is a team. Any one of them should have asked the question. I mean, it was sort of, I also love, and this is a little off topic, but that they make it be Daniel's sort of idea, where he's like, is there some secret old law that maybe we could exploit to save her?
Yeah.
And this is a classic thing that happens in the early seasons where they have to give Daniel these ways to contribute that are a little contrived. I mean, even in Children of the Gods, when he is the one who suggests Stellar Drift, this is so similar where he's like, throws out a random idea that turns out working, where he's like, is there some magical old law that might help us? And like, presumably he would have knowledge about somewhat maybe the laws of the culture a little bit, but mm-hmm. it's still just like him throwing out a wish and a prayer and then Fazu being like, oh, yes.
And like, speaking of people who like don't contribute, where the hell is Teal'c this episode? It's like the writers forgot he existed. He has barely any lines. He's hanging out in the background.
But I do agree, where was Teal'c this whole episode? I mean, he came in and he had a couple lines here and there, like, you know, hey, the horse is gone, and hey, yeah. why do you treat your women like this? But I mean, other than that, it was just kind of like, I'm gonna walk around with my staff weapon and just be intimidating in the background.
He was tracking the horse. He was the tracker. Jack is like, can you track it? And he said, now that I know what I'm looking for, yes.
Does he not know what a horse is?
The horse had a specific...
I'm looking for...
They mentioned specifically that Abu's horse had, like, a split in its hoof that he could be looking for.
Oh, okay.
And I definitely know that, like, as we go through the series, the writers don't give Teal'c the attention that often gets passed on to, like, Sam and Jack and Daniel until we get more of the, like, Teal'c heavy Chulak Jaffa freedom episodes, but these early seasons, there's a lot of like Teal'c light episodes.
Yeah. No, they didn't really know what to do with Teal'c a lot of the series.
Okay, so
which
we're
is
kinda,
very sad.
We're bouncing around. Okay, so we're fighting.
Okay, so here is the clip of Jack prepping Sam for her fight.
So when your back's up against the wall and there's no tomorrow, just take one day at a time and remember. The bigger they are, etc.
You don't think I can win?
Sure I do. I assume you've had at least some basic hand-to-hand training?
Yeah, level 3 advanced.
You'll do fine.
So now she's super psyched for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Put me in, coach.
Super pumped.
I do know that when Turgon and Sam start fighting, she looks surprised that there's a knife involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not actually hand-to-hand. And... that seems like a surprise to her. And then she starts doing some, like, Xena Warrior Princess crap, where she's, like, jumping around and dodging out of the way. And, I mean, I don't know what level 3 advanced is. I don't know how many levels total there are. Maybe there's only 3. I don't know. But whatever level 3 advanced is, it's very good, because Sam, like, kicks ass.
Mm-hmm.
But does hand-to-hand combat include knife combat? Is that 2 different things? Because, like, because like you said, she was surprised, you know, because mm-hmm. she was ready. She was at the ready to go fists going. Yeah. And he pulls a knife, and then she pulls her knife. I mean, she looks comfortable with the knife in her hand.
I would assume that combat training would include a knife mm-hmm. training, so.
Okay.
There's when Sam beats Turgon, and he's, like, rattling off, like, the pardons, essentially, and saying that, sure, Naya and Abu can get married, and there's going to be no consequences. And all this stuff. And then finally, like, Sam's last request is, say that I win. Like, I want to hear it from you. Say that I won. And that was very satisfying to watch after the entire episode. And then doubly satisfying after, like, on a personal level, after I learned that that particular actor was very rough with a mana tapping mm-hmm. on the hand-to-hand stuff. I was like, yeah, you get him. Tell him. Like, there was some fist pumping happening over here.
Yeah.
How many times has she had to do that, though? And, you know, in her, I guess, Air Force career. Yeah. You know,
a lot.
Yeah. Again, where is my Samantha Carter prequel series? I'm here for it.
Oh, I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
I love her.
All right. So Sam is victorious.
Yes.
Abu and Naya get to go get married.
Which is like a 6-day ceremony or something?
A 6-day wedding. Like
6 days?
Yeah.
Yeah. The hell they do for 6 days?
Well, it's kind of like Indian weddings are usually like multiple day affairs as well.
Oh, see, I don't.
A lot of weddings are, a lot of cultures have prolonged wedding traditions.
Yeah.
So then when they go back to Fazu's camp, they find out about the wedding. They're invited to the wedding. And then there's like an unveiling of all the women.
Yes.
And they say that that's basically Sam's legacy in this place, is that she'll be remembered for the fact that now all the women are allowed to show their faces.
So remember how we mentioned this episode was like low-key problematic, high-key racist? I don't love the kind of like not white savior situation happening, but like also it's happening, and like the thing that she gets remembered for is like liberating these women, and like I don't really like think I have the like education to really unpack the episode. All I know is like something is off here.
It's there are some white savior issues through with SG-1. It comes up a couple times, but this one is tricky, especially because they could offer that credit also to Naya, who was brave enough to run away and face the possible consequences. I think it's great that Sam, for all of the horrible things she went through in this episode, that something positive comes out of it. Not just like, because yeah, she beat the guy, but she's still gonna have personal repercussions because of this, but that so something positive comes out of it. So I appreciate that, but to act like they're the good thing in their culture is the legacy of the like one white person they met.
Yeah. This episode just makes me feel icky all around. That's all I can...
Can we just remember when this... I mean, this is not actually...
I know.
But no, I mean, I know. It was written in 1997.
97. Racism hadn't been invented yet. It's fine.
Shut up.
No. I know what you meant. But it is definitely, like, not... It's written in a time period where we're not as cognizant, I don't think, as we are now of... Yes. Your point is well taken. Yeah.
So then they head back to the Stargate. And that is the end of the episode, pretty much. Oh, yeah. And somewhere along the way, they had a medicine that we might want. And that was, like, super tacked on.
Well, like, they had talked about it briefly when they were, like, when Sam was in the tent. They were like, hey, we have medicines that you might want. And Sam was like, cool, I'll go check them out. And they were like, yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
Nope.
And it's an, apparently it's an anesthetic.
Yes. And because they say that we already have anesthetics... And I think, I don't remember who says it, but someone's like, but it could be a better one. And it's just like,
it was probably Jack.
Or Daniel. Was it? Yeah. And Sam backs it up too. She's like, oh, a lot of medical advances are coming out of the mountains and the jungles and stuff.
But again, this is before SG-1 has a prime directive, I'm pretty sure. And they've just been essentially set out to explore and establish and communicate. And I think they're just trying to bring back as much as possible, because eventually we do get the prime directive stated very explicitly in like season 4, but it takes a long time for us to get that prime directive.
The big honking escape space gun.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, that's our episode.
That was the episode, guys. Wasn't it great?
Who wants to go first to rate it?
I'll go. I will give it. I don't want to go. Someone else go.
instead of we're doing it out of 7 chevrons, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The silence is deafening. I'm going to say, I'll give it like a 1. Sorry, I'm giving it a 1. There is literally nothing redeeming. Like, the jokes that are there aren't even enough to make me like...
They fall flat.
They're in poor taste. They fall flat.
Well, some of them are in poor taste. Like, the things that made me laugh, like the kind of clips from Jack... about like the psyching up, or like Sam in the beginning, the I can't look at you, and the okay, now I'm hurt. Those things do make me laugh, but they're not enough to forgive the overall upset that I have on Sam's behalf. And like, if you're going to make me feel that icky for the majority of an episode, I want more than just, like, I don't know. I don't know if I wanted Turgon to die. I don't know if I wanted Sam to, like, rail at her team. I don't know what I wanted, but, like, the ending wasn't satisfying enough to justify the ick factor. So I'm giving it a 1, and also because I don't want to rewatch it ever again. So 1. 1 chevron for me.
I think I'm going to give it, like, a 2.5 to a 3. And my reason for that is just because of Amanda Tapping's acting ability throughout the whole episode, which is what, because the overarching story is awful. I hate everything about it. But her acting ability in it, and I did like the fight scene at the end because she really kicked ass. But I mean, everything else about the episode was just awful. The story was awful. The jokes fell flat. I mean, they, like you said, they were in poor taste. Like, it was just, it made me feel gross. Just didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But again, for her acting ability in that episode, I'm going to give it like a 2.5 to a 3.
I'll give it a 2 because, no, I have to give it a 1.
Yeah.
Because I agree, I said during the episode, that I think Amanda Tapping kills it, but I don't think that good acting performances can completely redeem a bad story. Yeah, I feel that I've been pretty clear with the reasons I don't like this episode. Mm-hmm. And I'm with Jess. I don't ever want to watch it again.
And it's definitely not like we are the only ones. And the producers were fully aware that it was a misstep and not the direction they wanted to go in. Whether that be because it was too preachy, or because they weren't equipped to handle what they were delving into, for whatever reason that made them want to pull back and go in a different direction, I'm very grateful for. But for the same reasons, I think, that made us dislike it, it made them pause, pull back, and go elsewhere. So we definitely aren't just, like, spouting nonsense. Like, the producers are fully aware as well.
Yeah. 1 out of 7 chevrons.
I'm going to settle on 2.5. Okay.
Moving on. Oh, I was going to say, the one of the main reasons I have to give it a 1-2 is just because of Jack being an uncharacteristic asshole. Like,
yes.
Because even before this, they had already established how protective he is of his team. Like, we saw him be so sweet with Kowalski in the previous episode. And, like, yeah, he always brings levity to things. I don't expect him to, like, sit down and have a great heart-to-heart with Sam after she's been freed or whatever. But I just thought his behavior was very uncharacteristic and frustrating and hard to watch when, like, a character you love and respect is doing and saying those things, and you're just... It's... Yeah, so that's one of the big reasons, too.
To be fair, I feel like that critique also is, like, heavier on the rewatch, because on the first watch, we don't know Jack at this point, and I remember texting Melanie and being like, I hope this character grows out of more than just this, like, cardboard cutout of, like, what a commander should be, because I'm not impressed so far. So, like, going forward, like, the first time you watch it, you don't know that this is out of character for Jack. Mm-hmm. But then, after you get 8 seasons and some episodes of character development, and then you go back and, well, because he wasn't there for full seasons. He only came in for episodes. I'm counting. But once you do all that, and then you go back and rewatch, and you watch a lot of these early episodes, none of these characters are the characters who they end up to be, and it's very painfully obvious that these first 6 or 7 episodes are them finding their footing, finding their characterization, and, like, who these people are. So,
yeah.
Brace thyself for some rough episodes ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely an episode that plays worse on repeat viewings. Like, I didn't love it the first time. I liked it even less in subsequent viewings. Do we want to give out an Air Medal Award for this episode?
Yes. To Samantha fucking Carter.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, is it even
no.
a question?
There is no contest. We're giving the Air Mail Award to Sam Carter because she was the only person in this episode who didn't suck.
Who had a brain?
That's not true. I guess Naya didn't suck.
Okay, Naya didn't suck. But just, we're giving it to Sam.
Yep. Sam is Sam is the MVP.
Yes, always.
Sam is always the MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so our next episode is Broker Divide. Another super not problematic episode at all.
Great. Oh, man.
To be fair, I have a lot more mixed feelings about Broker Divide.
Yeah.
Than I do Emancipation. Because there's at least good parts of Broker Divide that I like. I don't know if they're enough to outweigh certain other scenes, but that's a discussion for next week.
It sure is. All right, so that is our discussion on Emancipation. Please feel free to contact us or let us know your thoughts on the episode. If you disagree with us or maybe have some counterpoints for some of the things we said, I know this was a pretty one-sided discussion. We would love to hear your feedback. You can reach us as a podcast at Chevron's Locked 7 on Twitter, and that's our Gmail as well. And if you wanted to reach out to me, I am Cahils at Cahils on Twitter and Pianosa to the Fighting Eighth on Tumblr.
And then you can find me, Melanie, on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MarShan, or you can find me on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy.
And you can find me on Twitter at JustTheMess250 or on Tumblr at Professor Tennant.
So join us next week for our discussion on the Broker Divide, when you might learn something like Teal'c did.
So you think this new anesthesia will be a miracle drug on Earth?
Well, if it is, I bet somebody else will get the credit. We can never say where it came from.
Damn.
Guess I'm going to have to cancel that Oprah interview. What is an Oprah?
I love the way he says it. What is it, Oprah?
I also like that maybe Jack low-key watches Oprah on his like time off.
He's from Chicago. For sure he does.
Is Oprah from Chicago?
Yeah.
He tapes Oprah so he can watch it when he gets back.
Is that...
It films in Chicago.
Why are you saying that, Melanie? Is that canon?
No.
Well, because I know that he tapes The Simpsons, so like that is canon. So maybe he tapes Oprah. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yes. Just. It's set in stone. I've set it in stone. He tapes Oprah and watches it when he gets back.
Jack is a man of many layers. Okay. For all I know, that is true.